the chairman put his arm around me and said, you know what, kid, you should retire. And I'm like, I'm not even 40 years old. And he was like, well, I don't know if you'll ever outdo this.
Welcome to Mic Drop, the podcast for professional speakers. We cover the ins and outs of the business, helping you deliver more impact on bigger stages at higher fees. You'll gain an inside edge through intimate conversations with the world's most successful keynote speakers. Mic Drop is brought to you by eSpeakers. I'm your host, Josh Linkner. Get ready for some inspiring Mic Drop moments together. Today's show is sponsored by Impact 11, formerly known as Three Ring Circus, the best and most diverse and inclusive community built for training and developing professional speakers. They're not just elevating an industry we know and love, they work with hundreds of speakers to launch and scale their speaking businesses, earning tens of millions in speaking fees, landing bureau representation, securing book deals, and rising to the top of the field. To learn more and schedule a free intro call, visit impact11.com. That's impact11.com. Mic Drop is produced and presented by eSpeakers. If you want more audiences and organizations to be moved and changed by your message, you owe it to yourself to find out why thousands of top experts use eSpeakers to manage and grow their business. When you use eSpeakers, you'll feel confident about your business, package yourself up for success, and be able to focus on what matters most to you and your business. For more information and a free 30-day trial, visit eSpeakers.com/mic drop. That's eSpeakers.com/mic drop. On today's show, I sit down with the legendary Gail Davis. She's the founder and CEO of GDA, one of the most prominent and well-respected speaker bureaus on the planet. Before she launched her bureau 23 years ago, Gail hired dozens of speakers as a corporate meeting planner for a Fortune 100 company. So she's seen it all. And on today's episode of Mic Drop, she generously shares her perspective and her insights. I had so much fun in my conversation with Gail. We discussed a wide array of topics, including the common myths about speaker bureaus and the speaking industry, what bureaus look for in emerging speakers and how they should best make contact, and what it takes to create goosebump moments of inspiration from the stage. We even hop aboard a time machine to see what Gail would change if she should go back to the early days of her bureau, and then we zip into the future to test drive her crystal ball. On today's episode, Gail shares practical advice, truth bombs, from both a bureau and buyer perspective, and we even played a game where Gail is a mad scientist and gets to invent her own Frankenstein keynote speaker. Get ready for one of my favorite interviews yet. My good friend Gail Davis, welcome to Mic Drop.
Hey, thank you so much, Josh. It's always great to be with you in person or virtually.
Thank you. Well, I know the listeners are so excited to hear from you. Of course, one of the leading bureau leaders in our industry. Can you just take us back a little bit and share with us how you got started? I'd love to hear, you know, how you were first obviously managing, hiring speakers, then managing one, and then ultimately launched a bureau.
Well, it's my favorite story to tell. I went to work right out of college for a company called EDS that was founded by Ross Perot, and I had a variety of responsibilities over a 20-year career. But the one that changed my life was in 1994 at an event, the chairman of the company asked me who our speaker was going to be the following year. And I like to tell that story because I think we all have pretty much job security if you know that the chairman of Fortune 100, 500 companies are worried about keynote speakers. So, you know, I asked, why are you asking me this? And he said, well, I just want someone new and different. I want someone that everyone would like to hear, but no one's heard. And so it put me on this mission to find somebody new and different. That's a whole chapter in itself. But at the end of the day, I happened to watch the movie Alive about the plane crash in the Andes Mountains. I decided that that was my guy. And in 1994, there was no Google. So in order to find him, I went to a number of speakers' bureaus. But he wasn't on the speaking circuit. So a lot of phone calls, conversations in Spanish. I end up finding Nando Parrado. He came and spoke at our corporate conference. It was off the charts. The chairman put his arm around me and said, you know what, kid, you should retire. And I'm like, I'm not even 40 years old. And he was like, well, I don't know if you'll ever outdo this. So one thing led to another, and it just made sense for me to take a package from the company. I'd been there 20 years, and they were doing some downsizing. And because of my tenure, I was paid for a year. So I went home to think about what I wanted to do, and I started with one speaker, which was a poor business model when it's a guy who doesn't really want to speak more than about six times a year. And I just started pulling together a list of speakers and capitalizing on the relationships that I had made over the years. And that was 23 years ago, and it's been so much fun. It's such a positive industry, and I get to work with such great clients and speakers.
One of the things that I just love about you, since I've known you, I'm sure over a decade ago, is you really do that. That love for the industry comes through. I know you've been touched by speakers that have, you know, said powerful things. I know you're a lifelong learner. But back to Nando for a second, what was it about him that was so captivating to you? And what can we learn as we think, see Nando's success through your eyes?
First of all, he didn't set out to be a speaker. Many, many people approached him, and he was very hesitant to share the story. And he waited, which I think is good, because sometimes I think in our culture in the United States, something happens and people immediately want to go on the circuit. But he didn't really speak for over 20 years. And that allowed him to develop some perspective and be able to tell the story very differently than it would have been told had he jumped out there two or three years. He was super authentic. He's very generous with his time. He's never in a hurry. I mean, the connection that he made from the stage with the audience was incredible. But also, I like to say the CEO and the bellman equally feel like they've met their new best friend. So when he lands at a venue, he's just gracious and kind to everybody he encounters. And that goes a long, long way.
I love that, because you're busting a common myth that speakers are, you know, need to be these arrogant, self-centered, self-aggrandizing, and congratulatory. And Nando is the opposite. And you're right. And to me, that's a much better person to work with, better human being, and certainly a better speaker. While we're topics of myths, maybe we could dispel a couple other ones. Nando still speaks of his own story, his, you know, landing this plane in the Andes Mountains, all that. But there are a lot of speakers that really don't focus on themselves quite as much in the talk track. In fact, many of the most prolific speakers, Malcolm Gladwell, Adam Grant, Dan Pink, rarely talk about their personal stories. They're talking instead about their thought leadership and research. So to me, one obvious myth is that the whole speech doesn't have to be about you. What are some other myths that emerging speakers and new and experienced speakers alike might enjoy dispelling?
You know, I'm often asked by speakers, what is everybody looking for? What's the latest topic? And so maybe there's this thought that you constantly have to reinvent yourself for the current thing. And I'm not saying you should not refresh your materials. You're a genius at it, you know, and your stuff is a lot of examples and stories about points that you're trying to make, and you keep that fresh and you customize it for clients. But I think some speakers can err too far with that. Like, so let's take Nando. He hasn't really changed his talk in the 24 years that we've been working together, because that happens to be a story about a plane crash in the Andes Mountains and what happened over 72 days. So he doesn't get on the latest bandwagon of, oh, DEI is popular, so let's go out and position me as a South American guy. That's not what he does. He stayed true to his message. So I think the myth can work either way. Like, you don't ever need to refresh your materials. Well, that's ridiculous. But on the opposite side, I don't think you need to change who you are and what you're trying to be and how you're trying to connect with every one of the latest trends.
So well said. And speaking of myths, I think there's a lot of myths around speaker bureaus. As speakers work with bureaus, I've heard, you know, I'm sure you have the gamut of things. Oh, they're just trying to take my money. There are all these horrible things. There's a lot of wonderful things. But what are some of the common myths that you think that speakers have about speaker bureaus, and how could we dispel those?
Oh, wow. yeah, I'm trying to edit and think on the fly. I mean, obviously, there are, you know, always good apples and bad apples. And I would say, as a whole, I'm so proud to be associated with the International Association of Speakers Bureaus. I hold my colleagues at other bureaus in high esteem. It's not uncommon if I'm talking to a client and they say, oh, we're all set. We're already working with Premier Speakers Bureau. And I'm like, well, you're in great hands. That's wonderful. I mean, because it's so collegial and we have such a respect for each other. That being said, there have been some unfortunate things that have happened over the years where some speakers bureaus have gone out of business. They didn't have the proper respect for squeaky, clean accounting. And some speakers got burnt. And I hate that. But that would be an instance where I would say, please don't lump everybody together. Ask the right questions. I would open my accounting books to any speaker that wanted to see them. I appreciate the concerns you might have if you've never worked with me. But I have squeaky clean accounting. I've done it the same way for 23 years. I keep deposits in a special place and they don't get touched until the play date. So I just think that feeling that knowing that some bureaus did not have good accounting practices and did not live up to their obligations with some speakers, just don't assume that that's how everyone works. I think those are isolated few examples. I think that would be the main thing. I think another one would be that we're trying to keep you away from the client. That couldn't be further from the truth. I don't want to be an obstacle. As a matter of fact, I've reached out to you many times and said, hey, Josh, I've got a client. Here's their industry. Here's what they're asking for. What do you think? Sometimes you'll immediately reply back with, well, here's an example of something that I did. Be sure to share this with them. This is right in my sweet space. Or, hey, this isn't me, but let me suggest so-and-so. Sometimes you might say, Gail, get me on the phone with them. And I'm always going to do that. But I just want to keep the relationship. But some of these relationships, I'm so proud to say I've had for over 20 years. And so I just think we all need to have a mutual respect for each other. And I have no idea. If you get spinoff when I book you for someone, it's the honor system. The contract says you'll bring it back to me, and I know for sure you do. But I have no way to monitor that. So I think we all just have to live in integrity and put a tremendously high value on the partnership so that we both trust each other.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And there are bad apples in any industry, speakers and bureaus and artists and musicians and lawyers and everything else. So you're right. We can't lump them all together. And my experience is exactly that. Most bureaus, especially the notable ones like yours, are of the highest level of integrity, and they're honorable people who are there to help. And I think the other myth that I often think I hear from speakers is that, oh, I'm on Gail Davis's website. Therefore, you know, I just sit back and wait for the activity to roll in. And I think that, you know, the truth, of course, and you can expand on this, is that, you know, that is an important first step to get on someone's website. But speaker bureaus aren't responsible exclusively for creating all the demand for you. And you just sit back and hang out and wait for a contract. We as speakers have to also be deeply and intimately involved in creating demand. Would you agree? And is there anything you'd expand upon?
I would 100% agree. I think it is critical that as a speaker develops a partnership with a bureau, they're very clear on what model that bureau uses. So for example, when I started my company 23 years ago, I was very familiar with the exclusive speaker model. I had been a client of Washington Speakers Bureau for excess of 2 decades. And so it's important for you as a speaker to know that they book 2 kinds of speakers. They book exclusive speakers that they have an obligation to, that, you know, they're very involved with. And then they book some speakers that are not exclusive with them. But you want to understand how that works and how that's going to impact you. I, on the other hand, did not try to duplicate that model because it was already working very well in many instances. So mine is more client driven. And my goal is to get a client, keep a client, never go away, keep a client. And so I do a lot of co-brokering. I look for the best solution. I truly put on my meeting planner hat. And I remember when I used to have to answer to the chairman. And I try to work in partnership with my client to say who is the best option. And because it's client driven, I rarely run a campaign for a certain speaker, because that's not my model. I instead am constantly engaged with clients and understanding what are you looking for? Okay, here's the match. So I might meet a new speaker tomorrow and not put them in a proposal for 16 months, conceivably, if nobody's asking for that. But it's funny, you know, sometimes something comes top of mind and sure enough, next week, I'll overhear a conversation and I'll be like, oh, I just talked to so-and-so. But it's not, you know, sometimes people get frustrated when they first get on your website and they'll call you and go, well, my gosh, you know, I've been on there for 4 weeks and I haven't seen any bookings. Well, that isn't how it works. And another phenomenon, and so this wouldn't be a myth, to me, this is a fact. Once you get booked in a bureau and you do good work, that's when things start to happen because the logistics person will make a throwaway comment in front of everyone. Gosh, Josh's team is so responsive. They're so easy to work with. The sales agent will make a comment. Boy, I got the survey back. They really like Josh. They're looking at booking him again. And so when those kinds of stories start being heard around an office, that's going to up your chances for getting booked more frequently.
Oh, it's so good. So I thought we'd have some fun, play some games here. We obviously are friends, both professionally and personally. So this first game is going to be called Truth Bombs. Truth Bombs. And the truth bomb that I was hoping that you could share with me is this. You've been both a buyer, a meeting planner, and also obviously the CEO of your bureau. So first, from the buyer perspective, what is a truth bomb that speakers ought to know? Like, what's your, putting your buyer hat on for a second, what's that little piece of wisdom that maybe people are too shy to say, but they really ought to know? What should a speaker know as a truth bomb from a planner?
Some planners have preconceived notions about fees. I was one of them. I worked for a large corporation. We typically spent between $25,000. Now, this is 23 years ago, okay? So put that in its proper perspective. But we typically, our bottom rung was about $25,000. And then we probably didn't go over 100, but that would be the range. When I first started my bureau, I met a fantastic speaker here in Dallas. And I remember his fee was like $13,750 or something. It was under $15,000. And I discounted it. I thought, oh, what a nice guy, but I'll never work with him. I mean, I legitimately thought that. And then finally, I went and heard him, and I was blown away at the quality and how good he was. And that was a big learning for me, that price isn't everything. And why I use that truth bomb is because I know sometimes when speakers have experienced success and someone suggests increasing a fee, there can be a little bit of a scarcity, like, oh no, some of these things may go away. But it might be important to know there may be a whole other set of people that aren't looking at you just because in their mind, they equate a certain quality at a certain fee level, which isn't true, but it's a truth bomb that planners think that way.
Love that. What great insight. Becoming a keynote speaker is an amazing profession. The top performers earn millions in annual income while driving massive impact on audiences around the world. But the quest to speaking glory can be a slow route with many obstacles that can knock even the best speakers out of the game. If you're serious about growing your speaking business, the seasoned pros at Impact 11 can help. From optimizing your marketing and business efforts, to crafting your ideal positioning, to perfecting your expertise and stage skills, Impact 11 is the only speaker training and development program run by current high-level speakers at the top of their field. That's why the major bureaus like Washington Speakers Bureau, Premier Speakers, Speak Inc., Executive Speakers, Harry Walker Agency, Kepler, Gotham Artists, and GDA all endorse and participate in Impact 11. From interactive boot camps to one-on-one coaching, if you're looking to take your speaking career to the next level, they'll help you make a bigger impact faster. For a free 30-minute consultation, visit impact11.com/micdrop. Okay, so now putting your bureau hat on, what's a truth bomb that we speakers should know from a seasoned bureau executive?
Don't call me, I'll call you. I mean, it's just it's so true. The way I explain it to those speakers that I love and want to book, but I haven't yet had the opportunity, is every minute that I'm on the phone with you hearing about your latest and your greatest, and every minute that I'm reading another email telling me about your new this or that, is a minute that I'm not out there talking to somebody that might be interested in you. And that's, I hate the way it sounds because I know it's super off-putting, but it's true. Now, the flip side of that is, please be responsive and be available when I do reach out. So that's the cold reality. I think a lot of my colleagues would agree with me on that one. You can just reach out too much and then it's like, oh no, not again. So I would just be careful about how frequently you reach out to the bureau owner for sure. And maybe the right question, this is really good advice, ask who the right person in the organization is to give your updates to. Because it's not me at GDA Speakers, it's someone else. And she does an outstanding job. Just today we had a sales meeting and she previewed 18 speakers. And I was writing down too long, cut it, edit it. And about the time I was thinking that, one of the salespeople raised their hand and said, thank you that you have found a way to present this so that it is helpful. And I have already added 3 speakers to 3 different proposals. So she's the right person. Sending me an email with my inbox, I'm not the right person. So that's probably tip of the day. Ask who the right person is to send your material to.
Oh, it's so good. So we played the truth bomb game. Now I wanted to play the time machine game. So the time machine, welcome to the Mic Drop podcast time machine. We're going to go back 23 years. You're just starting your bureau, you get things rolling, but now you have the wisdom and insight that you have today. What's one thing that you might do differently with the insight now that you've gained in the business?
I would not have been as conservative about the amount of money that I paid people to work for me. So I never took out a loan, I never borrowed money, and I never had an investor. And so I hired a lot of young people, which was great, but I was the ultimate trainer of everybody for their first job before they went and found their second job. And if I could go back, I look at my colleagues like Holly Ketchpole. She's got this longevity of people that have worked with her for so long. And I think she had the wisdom to invest in good people, pay them what they were worth, and they stayed with her for the long haul. So I sometimes wonder, what would it have looked like if I would have tried a different approach?
That's really insightful. So staying in our time machine for a second, now imagine it's not 23 years, but just 5 years in the future, not so much in your business, but 5 years in the future. What do you think is different about the speaking industry compared to how things are looking today?
We've been through so much change the past 2 years. So I feel like I've seen everything, but surely I haven't. We were just talking today in our sales meeting about how virtual meetings haven't gone away. Some are very intentional. They're not in lieu of an in-person event, but they're very intentional. So I think the future is going to have something to do with this continued evolution of the format of a meeting. Is it a hybrid? Is it in person? In the past, let's say we had you booked for an in-person event and you got an inner ear infection and you couldn't fly. Well, you immediately were off the table and we're all scrambling looking for a replacement. I feel like what we've learned about studios and quality of virtual events, I think if that scenario happened today, they might not like it, but I think they'd be like, okay, we know Josh was the right guy. Let's just go ahead and he can't fly, but let's have him virtually. So I think that's going to continue to morph.
Yeah, agreed. Just building on that, I remember, Gail, you and I had a conversation right in the early days of the pandemic, and we were saying like, oh my gosh, what does this mean to the business? And we were, I think, crying on each other's shoulders a little bit.
I think that rings a bell.
The one good thing that has emerged, I believe, is that it's validated a new delivery channel. I actually gave a keynote yesterday in Austin, Texas. I wasn't too far from you in person. And today I gave a keynote, but it was in India, although I'm here in Detroit. So it was a virtual keynote for a Fortune 10 company. And the cool thing is that I think that's here to stay. You know, I wouldn't, their budget would, in this case, wouldn't have worked for me to fly to India, but it works great for me. I cranked it out in Detroit. It's good for them. And so to me, I think as speakers and bureaus alike, we now have this extra, this new delivery channel that I don't think cannibalizes the old one. I think that's here to stay, but it opens up a new one, which I think is going to actually drive more volume and more industry momentum. Do you concur with that?
100%. You know, Nando's a great example. We started talking about him, and he lives in Montevideo, Uruguay. It's a long way. I mean, it's, what, 9 hours to get here, but trying to get him to Hawaii, trying to get him to Asia, Europe. I mean, it's a long way. Therefore, it's expensive. So in the past, people were just like, I can't afford that. But now we're like, but he could do virtual. And so he's an example of there's only one Nando. So if you want him and you can't afford him in person, absolutely, that other delivery channel now is a very viable option. The quality is so improved. And it's funny to me, Josh, because I go to so many events, and particularly luncheon events, and the ballroom's full, and you've got the celebrity on the main stage. What's everybody doing? They're staring at the IMAX screens. So it's really not that different, you know, to have the speaker come in and be on the screen. That's what you're watching anyway. It's funny.
That's so true. So one last game I wanted to play is the game of Frankenstein. So imagine that you are this mad scientist, and you get to create the ideal keynote speaker. You can pull from different examples, a little bit of this person, a little bit of that person. You know, what is that Frankenstein ideal keynote speaker possess? What are they, maybe share with us, how's their delivery? What is their storytelling? How do they interact with the bureau channel? What is your mad scientist ultimate speaker? What are the components that would be included?
I love this game. Do I get what I create? Because I love it. Okay.
We'll send you a bobblehead.
So I think the first thing is responsive. I know how annoying it is. Like, we'll ask you if you're available, and then it drags out and it drags out, and we can't get our client to respond, and it drags out. And then all of a sudden they make an offer and we're like, come on, where is it? Where is it? But that's just the name of the game. We're in the service business, and we need a speaker who's responsive. So that's number one. We need a speaker who is clear on their content. When someone says to me, what does Josh speak about? I've got to be clear on it, but the only way I can be clear on it is if you can articulate it to me. So I need to understand the content. I need to understand your preferences. So don't have preferences, but fail to tell me. And then you get on site and you get negative feedback and you're like, well, you know, that's really not my preferred way. I've always done 40 minutes followed by a Q&A. And that threw me off that, you know, I didn't really want to do that. Well, let's be clear up front what the preferences are, and let's make sure we get those. I also, in this Frankenstein creation mode, a humble speaker and a generous speaker. And when I say generous, I mean generous with your time and generous with the people that want to meet you. I think that's so important. It goes a long way when a speaker is willing to hop on a pre-booking call. We try to avoid that, but sometimes the client just needs that extra connection before they can book it. And it's really important when the speaker shows up for the pre-event call and really listens. You know, I think it's interesting that you're professional speakers, but in some instances, you really need to be professional listeners. And so that's going to be the game changer. If you ask the question, why did you hire me? What part of my message was it that resonated? What challenges are you going through? What keeps you up at night? And then you take that and you put that into your content, then my client's going to be happy. I'm going to be happy. You're going to be happy. And we're going to get spinoff. So that's my combo: humble, generous, good content, and responsive.
I like it. Well, that's we'll have to go into the lab and see what we can muster up together. That's awesome.
I love it.
Well, you know, speaking of generous, you know, you're so generous of your time, and I want to be respectful for it. Maybe I'll just one last question, if you would. Maybe just share some quick hit do's and don'ts. Many folks that are listening are emerging speakers. They're the next generation. And of course, we have several people listening that are deeply experienced. But just giving some advice from your perspective, what are a couple do's and don'ts that we as speakers can do to succeed more, to win more, and of course, to work with and support the Bureau channel as well?
I would say on the don't list, don't complicate. And by that, everything from your fee to your message. You know, sometimes speakers will be like, well, if it's in this time zone, it's this amount, but if I have to get there 30 minutes early, well, you need to add this, but if I have to stay over, it's this, but over here in this quadrant of the United States, of the half point over by the Mississippi, it's this. And it just makes my head hurt. Like, how about a simple, this is my fee, this is my travel buyout. I get it, you get it, it's very clear. So don't overcomplicate it. Same thing, I sometimes look at a speaker and I'll look at the topic list that's been clipped, and it's like, you know, innovation, motivation, sports, theology, D&I, and I'm like, whoa. And then I don't even know what the person speaks about. So don't overcomplicate it. You know, Nando always says, I'm very simple, Gail. I'm very simple. Well, he's really not. He's a fascinating human being, but he keeps it simple. And I think people really appreciate that. So I would say don't overcomplicate. On the do's, do focus on developing a relationship. Not calling all the time, not emailing all the time, but developing a relationship. What does that look like? Reach out to the proper person and say, I have a speech in Dallas and I'd like for some people from GDA to come. Or I have a speech in Dallas and I have a window of time. Can I bring by lunch? Can I bring by, you know, we're always on a diet here, but cupcakes and apples or something. And if you meet somebody in person, they're going to remember you more. And then if you develop a relationship in a particular bureau, always do bring your spinoff back, because they're never going to forget that. And I just think putting your emphasis on developing the relationship is great. And don't develop the relationship with the client and then get spinoff and forget the bureau that got you there, because nobody feels good about that.
Yeah, no question. My simple rule for spin, and I know we've talked about this before, is if you are speaking to, let's say you booked someone for AT&T and someone else from AT&T comes and offers me an opportunity, that's obvious. That's spin. It's your client. Where it gets a little murkier for speakers, although it shouldn't, is that someone else in that audience who doesn't work for AT&T, works for a construction company, says, oh, you know, you'd be great at my event, and they call you 2 years later. And so the instinct would be, well, it wasn't really your client and blah, blah, blah. The truth is very simple here. If you just ask yourself, would I have had that opportunity but not for being in that room in the first place from Gail Davis? If you would have, the only reason you're even getting the call is because you were in that room, the only reason you got in the room is because GDA put us there, then it is 100%, no question, dark black line, that is spinoff that goes right back to the Bureau. To me, that's the easiest way to think about it. Would I have had this opportunity but not for the first opportunity?
And I've had some speakers that get all the way to the speech, and then in just some throwaway comment, they connect the dots and they're like, oh my gosh. And they'll send me a check and say, I'm so sorry, I had no idea until we were wrapping things up and somebody made a comment. And I want you to know that I got there because of you. Because it is hard. Sometimes it's really hard to track.
It is. And that's actually a very nice thing. I've physically done that, you know, like after speech, mailed a full commission check to somebody. But I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I think that the idea here is not just the money, which is great in that transaction, but it's also celebrating and maintaining the relationship. So yes. An even better approach would be, Gail, here's this check. I'm so sorry I didn't know this. And also, I'm going to make an introduction to that client, so you can talk to them about their next year's event, too. So it's not just the individual commission. It's nurturing and protecting those relationships. Well, this has been wonderful. It's always a delight to chat with you. I was maybe going to ask you to end on a high note here with us. And maybe you could just recall one speech that you've attended, You can share the speaker's name or not, maybe not Nando because we already talked about him, but maybe one time where you were sitting there listening to a speaker and that little nugget that you remembered and the way it touched you and made a difference in your life. I just think it'd be wonderful for us to celebrate and honor the profession before we say goodbye.
I probably have so many, and I have a little bit of a bias for a really great inspirational story. I mean, I just love them. And I always know that I'm really connected with the speaker when I am on the phone telling a client about them. And when I start to retell the story, then I have goosebumps. And that happened just to me yesterday. And I don't mind sharing the speaker's name. It's Liz Murray. She's known for a Lifetime movie called Homeless to Harvard. And, you know, she was the obvious fit with this client. And then I just start telling the story and I just look down and I have goosebumps. Why is that? Because she delivers her message with such poignancy and the words are just the perfect words. And it makes it very easy to retell the story because you're so connected. So that's what I love. And I've met so many people like that. And, you know, I love it when I can get on the phone with a client and not only tell them about a speaker, but tell them how the audience will feel after they hear that speaker speak.
Oh, what a beautiful place to leave the conversation. Well, Gail, thank you for your leadership in the industry. Thank you for our friendship and partnership. Thank you for your time and sharing wisdom today. And thank you for celebrating and loving and taking true joy in this beautiful craft. And thanks for sharing that mic drop moment.
Thank you, Josh.
I just love Gail's whole approach. She exudes joy while showing us all how to reach the next level. A few highlights for me were, number one, the way she prioritizes long-term relationships with speakers, favoring the ones that invest in making it a true win-win. The opposite of transactional, Gail's reputation is built on serving clients and nurturing trust-based relationships with speakers over time. Number two, her line, and she says, quote, "I think it's interesting that you're professional speakers, but in some instances, you really need to be professional listeners." Talk about a truth bomb. Too often, we're so eager to share that we forget to really listen and focus on serving others. Thanks for the timely reminder, Gail. And number three, bureaus don't wake up every morning saying, "Hey, how can I get a specific speaker booked today?" Instead, they focus on solving needs for their own clients. Your job isn't to pester them for more bookings, but rather to give them the ammo they need to deliver real value to their customers. We speakers win when we help our bureau partners win. There's no doubt in my mind that GDA will continue to be a key leader in the professional speaking industry. And there's even less doubt that Gail Davis will continue to set the standard for professionalism, thoughtful insights, and pure joy with her signature ear-to-ear smile. Thanks for joining me on another episode of Mic Drop. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. If you love the show, please share with your friends, and don't forget to give us a 5-star review. For show transcripts and show notes, visit micdroppodcast.com. Mic Drop is produced and presented by eSpeakers. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Impact 11. I'm your host, Josh Linkner. Thanks for listening, and here's to your Mic Drop moment.